Welcome to City of Dreams. I'm Dylan Collins, and Malt is back.
I'm back.
She's back. This is the second to last episode, so hopefully our contestants carpe diem and do an excellent job tonight.
I bet they will.
I bet they will, too. First up, 1990. We're in the 90s, BTW. 1990, Goodfellas, 2 points. Screenwriters, Nicholas Pileggi, Martin Scorsese. I always wanted to be a gangster. Gangster Henry Hill's monologue in this film's opening as a teenage boy in East New York, 1955, he intensely watched his idols, the gangsters, who used the nearby taxi stand as their front. Across the street from his family's tenement building, fascinated, he longed to be a part of them and the glamour. Nobody's on this monologue, so I'm going to read it now. As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States. Even before I first wandered into the cab stand for an after-school job, I knew I wanted to be a part of them. It was there that I knew that I belonged. To me, it meant being somebody in a neighborhood that was full of nobodies. They weren't like anybody else. I mean, they did whatever they wanted. They double-parked in front of a hydrant, and nobody ever gave them a ticket. In the summer, when they played cards all night, nobody ever called the cops. Okay, so that's that.
2 points to Team Dylan.
Yes. It was worth 2 points. Up next, 1991, Beauty and the Beast, worth 14 points. Somebody's on this, right, Malt?
I don't know.
Yes, Rochelle is on this. Do you want to set up the scene?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Wait, did you already read the screenwriters, or am I just, like, completely out of it?
I did not read the screenwriters yet.
Okay, screenwriters, Linda Wolverton. It's Who Could Ever Learn to Love a Beast? The narrator, the voice of David Ogden Steers, voiceover, introduction to the fairy tale in the film's opening. I can't read anything.
Aww,
explaining
yeah.
how the prince became a beast and how he could remove the enchantress's spell.
So Rochelle is going to be playing the role of the narrator, so let's listen to that. Oh, wait, let me say the score is going into this week. Team Bollywood, 42. Team Heaven Sucks, 70. Team Utterly Absurd, 196.5. And Team Oscar, 114.5. All right, now we will listen to Rochelle.
Once upon a time, in a faraway land, a young prince lived in a shining castle. Although he had everything his heart desired, the prince was spoiled, selfish, and unkind. But then, one winter's night, an old beggar woman came to the castle and offered him a single rose in return for shelter from the bitter cold. Repulsed by her haggard appearance, the prince sneered at the gift and turned the old woman away. But she warned him not to be deceived by appearances, for beauty is found within. And when he dismissed her again, the old woman's ugliness melted away to reveal a beautiful enchantress. The prince tried to apologize, but it was too late, for she had seen that there was no love in his heart. And as punishment, she transformed him into a hideous beast and placed a powerful spell on the castle and all who lived there. Ashamed of his monstrous form, the beast concealed himself inside his castle, with a magic mirror as his only window to the outside world. The rose she had offered was truly an enchanted rose, which would bloom until his 21st year. If he could learn to love another and earn her love in return by the time the last petal fell, then the spell would be broken. If not, he would be doomed to remain a beast for all time. As the years passed, he fell into despair and lost all hope. For who could ever learn to love a beast?
That was Rochelle Allard.
Rochelle, you look.
You have to say it like Rochelle Allard.
Shalalar.
Yeah, because right. That is how you pronounce her name in Singapore.
All right.
She was the only one on that monologue, so Team Heaven Sucks gets 14 points.
Woo!
I know. What do we have up next, Malt?
Next up, we have 1992 Reservoir Dogs.
Yes.
It's 6 points.
And
first up is
Whoa. Screenwriter Quentin Tarantino.
What?
The meaning of like a verb.
Fine.
The film's opening scene, in which various characters, mostly Mr. Brown, talked back and forth about the meaning of Madonna's tune Like a Virgin. Now we have Temporary Butterfly up first. It is worth 6 points, right? Yes. So let us listen to Temporary Butterfly.
Let me tell you what Like a Virgin's about. It's all about a girl who dinks a guy with a big dick. The entire song, it's a metaphor for big dicks. Like a Virgin's not about some sensitive girl who meets a nice fella. That's what True Blue's about. Now granted, no argument about that. Let me tell you what Like a Virgin's about. It's all about this cooze who's a regular fuck machine. I'm talking morning, day, night, afternoon, dick, 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 dick. Then one day she meets this John Holmes motherfucker, and it's like, whoa, baby. I mean, this cat is like Charles Bronson in The Great Escape. He's digging tunnels. She's getting this serious dick action, and she's feeling something she ain't felt since forever. Pain. Pain. It hurts. It hurts her. It shouldn't hurt her. You know, her pussy should be bubbly on by now. But when this cat fucks her, it hurts. It hurts just like it did the first time. You see, the pain is reminding a fuck machine what it was once like to be a virgin. Hence, Like a Virgin.
Genesis also on the monologue.
Let me tell you what Like a Virgin's about. It's all about a girl who digs a guy with a big dick. The entire song, it's a metaphor for big dicks. Like a Virgin's not about some sensitive girl who meets a nice fella. That's what True Blue's about. Now, granted, no argument about that. Let me tell you what Like a Virgin's about. It's all about this cooze who's a regular fuck machine. I'm talking morning, day, night, afternoon. Dick, 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 dick. Then one day she meets this John Holmes motherfucker and it's like, whoa, baby, I mean, this cat is like Charles Bronson in The Great Escape. He's digging tunnels, she's getting this serious dick action, and she's feeling something she ain't felt since forever. Pain. Pain. It hurts. It hurts her. It shouldn't hurt her, you know, her pussy should be bubblegum by now, but when this cat fucks her, it hurts. It hurts just like it did the first time. You see, the pain is reminding a fuck machine what it was once like to be a virgin. Hence, Like a Virgin.
But that was the Reservoir Dogs monologue. Temp and Genesis. Since you just said you don't have any critiques on either of them, you should go first.
Thank you.
If you want me to go first, I will, because I have critiques. Let's talk about Temp first either way.
All right, well, like, I think I say this almost every time we listen to something attempts, but like her voice is just so adorable. I love her voice. But like I feel like with this monologue it was so surreal sounding.
Yeah. You sound like you were trying to be quiet on the word. Hold on. We need to not be on cam, we're lagging. I didn't mean to stop the entire call. I just meant to stop the cam thing. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, so back to what you were saying about Temp.
Okay. I don't even know like where I left off because it got so messed up.
Well, you were saying she sounds so cute, but this is a surreal monologue.
Yeah, like with her voice, I think it sounded a little surreal. Mm-hmm. And like because of that, it was like kind of strange to listen to. But I thought you did it like very well. It made me laugh.
Yeah, you sound like you were trying to be a little quiet. On the word fuck, you got all quiet, which seems to be a recurring problem with contestants on the show. But I liked it overall as well. What did you think about JC?
I think that JC also did it very well, but there were some points in it where he fell a little flat, actually. And I think it was mostly towards the end, and that's why it stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seemed like he sort of lost the like rough and tough sort of manner of what she was speaking towards the beginning.
I thought you sounded more conversational. You picked your spots more. I felt more of the monologue from you as far as it being like, it didn't sound as reedy to me. It sounded more natural coming from you. As natural as a monologue like this can sound like. But who did you pick?
I picked Temp.
I picked JC, so they split the 6 points. So 3 points go to team Oscar, and 3 points go to team Utterly Absurd. So the score is now Team Heaven Sucks 84, Team Utterly Absurd 199.5, Team Bollywood 42, Team Oscar 117.5. Next up is the Philadelphia Monologue, which nobody picked.
What?
I know. It was worth 16
That's
points.
A good amount of points there.
16 points. Philadelphia screenwriter Ron Niswanar, opening statement to jury. Homophobic attorney Joe Miller made an opening statement to the jury to defend his AIDS-afflicted client Andrew Beckett, allegedly fired from his prestigious Philadelphia law firm for having AIDS but protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act. Do you want to read this one?
Sure, just let me do a really quick skim.
All right.
All right.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, forget everything you've seen on television and in the movies. There's not going to be any last-minute surprise witnesses. Nobody's going to break down on the stand with a tearful confession. You're going to be presented with a simple fact. Andrew Beckett was fired. You'll hear two explanations for why he was fired. Ours and theirs. It is up to you to sift through layer upon layer of truth until you determine for yourselves which version sounds the most true. There are certain points that I must prove to you. And point number one, Andrew Beckett is a brilliant lawyer. Great lawyer. Point number two, Andrew Beckett, afflicted with a debilitating disease, made the understandable, the personal, the legal choice to keep the fact of his illness to himself. Point number three, his employers discovered his illness, and, ladies and gentlemen, the illness I am referring to is AIDS. Point number four, they panicked. And in their panic, they did what most of us would like to do with AIDS, which is just get it and everybody who has it as far away from the rest of us as possible. Now, the behavior of Andrew Beckett's employers may seem reasonable to you. It does to me. After all, AIDS is a deadly, incurable disease. But no matter how you come to judge Charles Wheeler and his partners in ethical, moral, and inhuman terms, the fact of the matter is, when they fired Andrew Beckett because he had AIDS, they broke the law.
You have convinced me, Malt.
I don't know what you said because you're lagging again.
There's a huge storm outside, so it's like my internet is screwing up. I'm just hoping we get through the show. But I said you convinced me, Malt.
Oh, cool. I should be a lawyer.
Yeah. The 20-point monologue is 1994 Swimming with Sharks, which is a movie I love, and there's three people on this monologue. Screenwriter George Huang, that's the trouble with your fucking MTV microwave dinner generation. Influential, abrasive, and tyrannical movie mogul and film producer Buddy Ackerman verbally abused his newly hired, naive, and gullible young assistant writer, a recent college graduate, even remaining belligerent when he was bound and Guy sought payback time. Buddy revealed how he had made it to the top by putting up with tyrants and suffering the senseless rape and death of his wife. We've got three people again on the monologue. First up is Copper. Oh, yeah.
You think you know it all, don't you? You're 25 years old. You're a baby. You don't know shit. Look, I can appreciate this. I was young, too. I felt just like you. Hated authority. Hated all my bosses. Thought they were full of shit. Look, it's like they say. If you're not a rebel by the age of 20, you got no heart. But if you haven't turned establishment by 30, you've got no brains. Because there are no storybook romances. No fairy tale endings. So before you run out and change the world, ask yourself, what do you really want? You were getting complacent, ungrateful, complete and total job burnout, and don't think I didn't notice. You just didn't give a shit anymore. dragging your feet everywhere, telling everybody you were doing my job, that you were running the show, that without you, I was nothing. Yeah, people tell me things. So don't come preaching to me about your ideas of what's fair. You're no martyr here. You're no hero. You're just a fucking hypocrite. You're like any other punk kid out there looking for a way in. Any way in. And you need me, because I earned it. What, you think someone just handed me this job? I've handled the phones. I've juggled the bimbos. I've put up with the tyrants, the yellers, the screamers. I've done more than you can even imagine in that small mind of yours. I paid my dues, and I spent 10. Damn it, it's my turn to be selfish. It's my turn. See, that's the trouble with your fucking MTV microwave dinner generations. You all want it now. You think you deserve it just because you want it? It doesn't work like that. You have to earn it. You have to take it. You have to make it yours. But first, guy, you have to decide what it is you really want. What life? What life? I gave you life! Before me, you were nothing. Before me, you were an ink spot. And now you're playing in the majors. I made you. You will always be Guy from Buddy Ackerman's office. You want to go back to your shitty little existence? Go ahead. Leave. There's the door. No one's stopping you. You could have left any day, but you stayed. So let's forget the Dudley damn do-right crap. Because out here, it's kill your parents, fuck your friends, and have a nice day. Look, I don't make the rules. I play by them. What, your job is unfair to you? Grow up. Way it goes. People use you. Life's unfair? Grow up. Way it goes. Your girlfriend doesn't love you. Tough shit. Way it goes. Your wife gets raped and shot, and they leave their unfinished beers. Their stinking long necks just laying there on the ground. So be it. Way it goes. All right, guy. Come on. Let's finish this. Give it to me. Show me what you're made of. Show me what you've learned. And don't let me down, son. Everything I've taught you comes down to this. This is the only way you can hope to survive. Because life is not a movie. Everyone lies. Good guys lose. And love does not conquer all. So let's do this thing. Let's finish it. Do it. Come on! Do it!
Alright, next up on this monologue... I love this movie so much. Next up we have... Read to Me.
You think you know it all, don't you? You're 25 years old, you're a baby, you don't know shit! Look, I can appreciate this. I was young too, I felt just like you. Hated authority, hated all my bosses, thought they were full of shit. Look, it's like they say. If you're not a rebel by the age of 20, you got no heart. But if you haven't turned establishment by 30, you've got no brains. Because there are no storybook romances, no fairy tale endings. So before you run out and change the world, ask yourself, what do you really want? You are getting complacent, ungrateful, complete and total burnout. And don't think I didn't notice. You just didn't give a shit anymore. Dragging your feet everywhere, telling everybody you were doing my job. That you were running the show. That without you, I was nothing. Yeah, people tell me things. So don't come preaching to me about your damn ideas of what's fair. You're no martyr here. You're no hero. You're just a fucking hypocrite. You're just like any other punk kid out there looking for a way in, any way in. And you need me, because I earned it. What? You think someone just handed me this job? I've handled the phones. I've juggled the bimbos. I've put up with tyrants, the yellers, the screamers. I've done more than you can even imagine in that small mind of yours. I paid my dues, and I spent 10. Damn it, it's my turn to be selfish. It's my turn. That's the trouble with your fucking MTV microwave dinner generation. You all want it now. You think you deserve it just because you want it? It doesn't work like that. You have to earn it. You have to take it. You have to make it yours. But first, guy, you need to decide what it is you really want. What life? What life? I gave you life! Before me, you were nothing. Before me, you were an ink spot. And now you're playing in the majors. I made you. You will always be Guy from Buddy Ackerman's office. You want to go back to your shitty little existence? Go ahead. Leave. There's the door. No one's stopping you. You could have left any day, but you stayed. So let's forget that Dudley damn do-right crap, okay? Because out here, it's kill your parents, fuck your friends, and have a nice day. Look, I don't make the rules. I play by them. What? Your job is unfair to you? Grow up. It's the way it goes. People use you? Life's unfair? Grow up. It's the way it goes. Your girlfriend doesn't love you? Tough shit! It's the way it goes. Your wife gets raped and shot, and they leave their unfinished beers. The stinking log that's lying on the ground. So be it! It's the way it goes! All right, Kelly. Come on. Let's finish this. Give it to me. Show me what you're made of. Show me what you've learned. Don't let me down, son. Everything I've taught you comes down to this. This is the only way that you can hope to survive. Because life is not a movie. Everyone lies. Good guys lose. And love does not conquer all. So let's do this thing. Let's finish it. Do it! Come on, do it now!
And Zigbar.
You think you know it all, don't you? You're 25 years old. You're a baby. You don't know shit. Look, I can appreciate this. I was young too. I felt just like you. Hated authority. Hated all my bosses. Thought they were full of shit. Look, it's like they say. If you're not a rebel by the time you're 20, you got no heart. But if you haven't turned establishment by 30, you've got no brains, because there are no storybook romances, no fairy tale endings. So before you run out and change the world, ask yourself, what do you really want? You are getting complacent, ungrateful, complete and total job burnout. I don't think I didn't notice. You just didn't give a shit anymore. Dragging your feet everywhere. Telling everybody you were doing my job. That you were running the show. That without you, I was nothing. Yeah. People tell me things. So don't come preaching to me about your ideas of what's fair. You're no martyr here. You're no hero. You're just a fucking hypocrite. You're like any other punk kid out there, looking for a way in, any way in. And you need me, because I earned it! What, you think someone just handed me this job? I've handled the phones. I've juggled the bimbos. I've put up with the tyrants, the yellers, the screamers. I've done more than you can even imagine in that small mind of yours. I paid my dues, and I spent 10. Damn it, it's my turn to be selfish. It's my turn. See, that's the trouble with your fucking MTV microwave dinner generation. You all want it now. You think you deserve it just because you want it. It doesn't work like that. You have to earn it. You have to take it. You have to make it yours. But first, Guy, you need to decide what it is you really want. What life? What life? I gave you life. Before me, you were nothing. Before me, you were an ink spot. And now you're playing in the majors. I made you. You will always be Guy from Buddy Ackerman's office. You want to go back to your shitty little existence? Go ahead. Leave. There's the door. No one's stopping you. You could have left any day, but you stayed. So let's forget the Dudley damn do-right crap, because out here, it's kill your parents, fuck your friends, and have a nice day. Look, I don't make the rules. I play by them. What? Your job is unfair to you? Grow up, way it goes. People use you, life's unfair. Grow up, way it goes. Your girlfriend doesn't love you? Tough shit, way it goes. Your wife gets raped and shot, and they leave their unfinished business. The stinking long necks is lying there on the ground. So be it, way it goes. Alright, guy, come on. Let's finish this. Give it to me. Show me what you're made of. Show me what you've learned. Don't let me down, son. Everything I've taught you comes down to this. This is the only way that you can hope to survive, because life is not a movie. Everyone lies. Good guys lose, and love does not conquer all. So let's do this thing. Let's finish it. Do it. Come on. Do it now!
Alright, so that was Swimming with Sharks. This is the 20-point monologue. It's the big one. It's the big one. We'll go one by one once again, and we will talk about each one. Let's talk about Copper first! Are you there, Malt? I know my internet's being horrible.
I caught you when you said, let's talk about Copper first.
Alright, you talk and I'll listen.
Alright. Copper, I really, really, really love this monologue for you. Like, you did so good on it. I really loved the beginning. I loved the anger that you had through it. And you were, like, really strong throughout. There were some points where the anger got a little aimless, and it didn't really seem like you had, like, somewhere where you were really, like, hammering it down into. But the emotion that you had at the end, you blew me away with this monologue. Great job, Copper.
Yeah, amazing read. I think it was the best read from you that I've heard all season. It's actually the best read from you I think I've ever heard. If I was being nitpicky, I wish you'd have taken it down a little as well in certain points. So when it did build, it really built. But I loved this read so much. You gave me chills when you were talking about your wife. I wish you had taken a small break between The Way It Goes and then All Right Guy, because it's sort of two separate thoughts. But I really liked it so much. I'm being nitpicky. I thought this was an amazing read from you. Let's talk about Read to Me.
All right.
You want me to start or you want to start?
You can start this time.
I like your read as well. The beginning felt a little bit reedy to me. On Raped and Shot, when you were talking about your wife, I wanted it to kind of sneak up a little bit more. The transition was a bit sudden. Sneak up is probably not the right word, but I wanted it to kind of more seamlessly go into that. It was just like it came really suddenly. But I like this read so much as well. What did you think about this one?
I actually agree. Like, one of the notes that I have was that the sadness there was, like, really, really sudden.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know, like, he seemed, yeah, it seemed a little reedy until that moment to me. And then, like, all of a sudden it was like, bam.
Mm-hmm.
Emotion. I was like, whoa, where did that just come from?
Let's talk about this.
I did like his read.
I liked it as well. Let's talk about the Zigbar.
The Zigbar,
you first.
Alright. I like how you had, like, your anger, like, it seemed like you were restraining it, and it made it sound kind of interesting, but then you did let it out a little more towards certain parts, and I thought it was really good how you did that. And I actually made a note, like, I really loved how you said, kill your parents, fuck your friends. I loved how you said that.
I liked how...
And,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, and then, like, being nitpicky,
we lost her. Malt, come back to us! Malt! Malt! See, I'm a really good actor because that was like my scene where I lost the love of my life and I'm like tormented. I'm like, Malt!
I think you sounded a bit tired.
A bit tired, she said. I got that. Poor Malt. Poor my internet. I want to start on your critique, Zigbar, but I don't want to interrupt her if she comes back. Alright, for me it sounded a little...
Set at the end?
Malt? Malt?
Yeah.
Okay. None of that... We didn't get any of Zigbar's critique from you.
Really?
Yeah.
Are we recording?
We're recording right now, yes.
Okay, I was eating pie, everybody. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I'll start over from the beginning. I loved your anger because it was restrained in a really interesting way. And I thought it gave it a different sort of feel, along with the accent, which just, like, does crazy things to monologues, and I absolutely love it. I absolutely adored the way that you said the line, kill your parents, fuck your friends. Like, I made a note about it because I just really loved how you said that. It sounded a bit reedy towards some points, and it sounded kind of tired more than upset at the end. And then there was a very obvious cut that sort of, like, took you out of the feel. Oh my god, no. 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 Internet.
Uh-oh.
Connection stop. I don't even know if I'm going to do that, like, cut me off again.
No, you're good.
I'm good?
Yeah. I got
it's probably going to have, like, a big gaping hole in my critique for you, but basically, Zigbar, I loved it. You did good. I'm just being nitpicky with, like, a few things, but you did good.
It sounded too Batman villainy for me. I didn't get much vulnerability from it. The obvious cut also bothered me. That was pretty much what I had to say on that. Oh, dear. Malt dropped again. Let's see. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, you just muted. I thought you dropped.
No.
Who did you pick as the winner?
I picked Copper.
I also picked Copper. So, 20 points. Is this the 20-point one?
Yeah, this is the 20-point one.
20 points go to Team Bollywood.
Bollywood!
So they're at 62. I know that their goal for this show is no longer to win, but to just not be in last place. So that's 20 points towards achieving that. However, Heaven Incarnate is getting 4 points. He's the only one on this next monologue from Clueless. Writer Amy Heckerling, debating Haitian immigration, shares debate class speech, taking the pro position on should all oppressed people should be allowed refugee in America. I don't know. That was written weirdly. But, Heaven Incarnate, let's hear it.
So, okay, like, right now, for example, the Haitians need to come to America. But some people are all, what about the strain on our resources? But it's like, when I had this garden party for my father's birthday, right? I said RSVP because it was, like, a sit-down dinner. But people came that, like, did not RSVP, so I was, like, totally bugging. I had to haul ass to the kitchen, redistribute the food, squish in extra place settings, but by the end of the day, it was, like, the more the merrier. And so if the government could just, you know, get to the kitchen and rearrange some things, we could certainly party with the Haitians. And, in conclusion, may I please remind you it does not say RSVP on the Statue of Liberty.
That was Heaven Incarnate earning 4 points to Team Heaven Sucks, who are at 88 now. When we come back, 1996, Waiting for Guffman, 8 points. Melly's on that monologue. Another one of my favorite movies, so stay with us.